From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton with this statewide and local news update. Today is the first workday since some departments of the federal government shut down late last week due to a lapse in funding. Alaskans may not notice much, though. That's because many agencies and federal employers like the Air Force and Army are funded. Mail service will continue as usual. But funding has lapsed for about 25% of the government, including the U.S. Departments of Commerce, Homeland Security, Interior, and Transportation, among others. Within the unfunded departments, some federal services will continue. Employees who do weather forecasts, air traffic control, and airport screening, along with Coast Guardsmen, are deemed essential. They have to work but will be without pay until Congress and the President reach an agreement. At the Interior Department, the picture is mixed. Subsistence activities can continue as usual on wildlife refuges. National park areas will generally remain open to visitors, but emergency and rescue services will be limited. Governor Mike Dunleavy is shaking up the State Department of Fish and Game. His acting commissioner, Doug Vincent Lang, has made a pair of unconventional high-level appointments. Rick Green, the right-wing talk show host, known as Rick Rydell, is a new special assistant. And Eddie Grasser, a former lobbyist for a hunter's advocacy group, will lead one of the department's major divisions. Nat Hurst, with Alaska's Energy Desk, reports on the direction that the new appointees could steer the department.
A couple of weeks ago, Rick Rydell was still broadcasting his Drive Time Anchorage radio show.
28 degrees in Anchorage, 28 in Eagle River. You're listening.
By Thursday of last week, he was back to his given name, Rick Green. And he was sitting at a desk as an employee of the state of Alaska.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to be Rick Rydell again.
Rick Rydell once referred to himself as a flame-throwing conservative who took down liberal wackos on the radio. Now Rick Green is an $87,000 a year special assistant to Doug Vincent Lang, the acting Fish and Game Commissioner.
The commissioner charges me with tasks. The main one is outreach and rebuilding trust with user groups. And then outside of that, whatever he needs done.
On the campaign trail earlier this year, candidate Mike Dunleavy criticized the management of the Fish and Game Department by then-Governor Bill Walker's administration. Particularly when it came to fishing. Dunleavy and his supporters said Walker was overly sympathetic to commercial fishermen and not mindful enough of sport fishermen and dip netters. Now that Dunleavy is governor, the department's top fisheries managers haven't been appointed yet. But one thing the agency is already doing, according to Vincent Lang, the new commissioner, is trying to open dialogues with groups that he says had a hard time getting information under the previous administration.
That's why I hired Rick. He's got some skills. He's got a lot of contacts out there, and I'm going to expect him to go out and talk to people and have an open-door policy with those people that he not only are aligned with his own personal philosophies, but also is aligned with other interests that may out there, so they can bring those back to me.
Vincent Lang says one of his top priorities as commissioner will be food security and helping Alaskans put dinner on their tables. As part of that, he says he won't shrink from some of the policies he promoted when he worked at Fish and Game under Sean Parnell, the previous Republican governor. While holding top positions at the department, Vincent Lang fought the federal government on several fronts, like by arguing that federal protections for endangered species like humpback whales and steller sea lions were unnecessarily restricting fishing and oil and gas development. Vincent Lang also was an advocate for predator control, a contentious state program that kills species like wolves and bears in an effort to leave more moose and caribou for hunters.
I'm not going to shy away from doing predation control to increase productivity. To the extent that we're going to manage those ecosystems to maximize the number of moose and caribou coming out there for putting food in Alaskan plates, I'm willing to do that.
Some conservation-minded Alaskans say they're worried that the Fish and Game Department under Dunleavy will focus on hunting and exclude other priorities like wildlife viewing and tourism.
You know, if I were a wolf or a bear right now in Alaska, I'd be headed for the Canadian border ASAP.
Rick Steiner is an environmental advocate and former marine conservation professor in Anchorage. One of the things he's alluding to is the hiring of Eddie Grasser as the department official in charge of wildlife conservation. Grasser grew up in a family of hunting guides and tells stories about riding horses as they swam across the Copper River in the Wrangell Mountains. He's since become a lobbyist and advocate for sportsmen's groups like the Alaska Outdoor Council and the National Rifle Association. In the 1990s, Grasser pushed the Fish and Game Department to cut spending on programs like bear and bird viewing, saying they were sucking up revenue that came from taxes on guns, bullets, and hunting and fishing licenses. More recently, Grasser has lobbied for another hunter's advocacy group, Safari Club International. Steiner, the environmental advocate, says appointees like Grasser, Green, and Vincent Lang are too narrowly focused on the interests of recreational hunters.
I think the out-of-state trophy hunters and trappers will fare well. But, you know, the major stakeholders that should be very concerned are the commercial fishing industry, the tourism industry, and even, I would say, the subsistence community.
Steiner's comments get at long-running conflicts over subsistence between rural Alaskans, particularly Alaskan natives, and hunters from less remote parts of the state. Sometimes those groups vie for the same fish and game. The Alaska Federation of Natives, one of the most powerful advocacy groups that backs subsistence users, says it's way too early to judge the direction of the Dunleavy administration. President Julie Kitka says the organization is looking forward to meetings with top officials and seeing where common ground is. Vincent Lang says he'll have an open-door policy and points out that the Fish and Game Department has a subsistence division to which people can bring concerns. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
About 12 years ago, Juneau became one of many American cities to stop fluoridizing its tap water. Unlike others, a public health researcher decided to study the real-world aftermath of ending fluoridation in Juneau. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports.
That's a tooth being filled on YouTube. That and other cavity treatments have become a lot more common in dentists' chairs since Juneau ended fluoridation in 2007. Jennifer Meyer is a public health researcher with a new study in the journal BMC Oral Health. She talks about tooth decay and cavities the way dentists do. She calls them caries. And after studying what happened in Juneau to children under six, this is her takeaway.
By taking the fluoride out of the water supply, we are basically, the trade-off for that is children are going to experience one additional caries procedure per year, at a ballpark of $300 more per child.
She can talk about it in terms of money because she studied the complete set of Medicaid dental claims for 2 years filed for kids in Juneau's main zip code. She got a year's worth of data before fluoride went away and another year's worth 5 years after it went away for about 1,900 kids total.
So I looked at every single record for every single child in that sample in both groups, and it took weeks. I just have to cry a little because it was a lot of time.
For children under six, here's what happened. When the water was fluoridated, on average, they had about 1.5 cavity-related procedures per year. After fluoride was gone, that went up to about 2.5 procedures a year. There's an increase for older kids too, but less dramatic. The expense adds up.
The cost to have a fluoride management program to actually fluoridate the water is pennies by comparison to what it costs to treat a cavity.
It would be more expensive for anyone, not just the public, by providing dental care through Medicaid. But Meyer says people with less money are especially vulnerable when fluoride goes away. For example, parents can get prescriptions for fluoride tablets.
I think that's a great option for people, but it's also a headache. You got to get the prescriptions filled. You got to remember to give it. You got to make sure the kids don't take more than one. You know, there's risks to that. It sets up a precedent for inequity.
But Meyer's research isn't winning over longtime fluoride opponents like David Hamm. He was active in the movement to take fluoride out of Juneau's water in 2006.
I believe I have the right to have a public water supply that is pure and to decide for myself what medicines I wish to take. And I just don't wish to be exposed to a toxic chemical, fluoride.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, World Health Organization, European Union, and other government and medical institutions have long held that low levels of fluoride in drinking water are safe.
It's KTOO's Jeremy Shea reporting. A high wind warning remains in effect until 6 p.m. this evening for downtown Juneau and Douglas. Gusts up to 70 miles an hour.